Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Alan Fadling is with me today on the podcast. Delighted to have him as we're going to be talking about an unhurried life, following Jesus' rhythms of work and rest. Some of you are going, ha, 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 ha. I'm living an unhurried life during shelter at home and all this, shelter in place. So we're going to talk a little bit about what that might look like, where we are, and also when life resumes, whatever that may look like. But for those who are unfamiliar with Alan, he is president and founder of Unhurried Living in Mission Viejo, California, inspiring people to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better. That alone sounds great, doesn't it? Author of a couple of books, and I'm quickly reaching off mic for a book that he co-wrote with his wife recently, because you might recognize the last name, Fadling. I talked recently with Jem, What Does Your Soul Love? 8 Questions That Reveal God's Work in You. We had a great conversation with some of you. I heard from some of you about that one. As always, if you have a question or a comment about what we're talking about on the podcast, just shoot an email. Would love to hear from you and hopefully respond to that question as well. The email address is producer@anitalustria.com. So Alan, welcome to Faith Conversations.
Thank you, Anita. It's good to be with you.
And I have to say, some listeners will appreciate this and know where I used to be. You and I were talking just before I hit record about my previous radio experience with Moody, and that program was called Midday Connection. I think maybe for the first time, I almost said, welcome to Midday Connection instead of Faith Conversations. I haven't done that in years. So anyway, it's kind of funny to me. Well, glad to have you. And I just want to say that An Unhurried Life, this is a revised and expanded edition that InterVarsity Press has released. So not exactly a true re-release, because there have been additions to this. But I thought it was a great topic for us to start with. But what are some of the additions as well? Let's talk about that briefly.
Right. Well, basically what we wanted to do was do a little bit of updating, not so much of the content, but there was the need for a group leader guide. We had produced one for the most recent book, What Does Your Soul Love? And that really has been well received.
Yes.
It makes the book a lot easier for small groups to use.
Yeah.
So that was maybe the strongest edition. I also wrote an appendix of what I would call 5-minute retreats.
Yes.
So little exercises that you could stop in the middle of a busy day or in the middle of a not so busy day, you know, as some of us maybe are experiencing now, just to stop and remember God being with you.
Nice. Yeah, I really like that. I like that. I like both editions. I'm a big lover of small group resources and anything that will help encourage the conversation to go deeper. And so, so I love what you've done there. And who can, I mean, I think everyone can give a thumbs up to the 5-minute retreat idea, and I'm glad you included that as well.
Mm-hmm.
For those who maybe aren't familiar with An Unhurried Life, the original book came out in like 2012, 2013, somewhere in that range, right?
2013, right.
Yeah. What was the impetus behind writing it? There's a story that, you know.
Oh, there's always a story.
we write something that we need to
That's true.
Pay attention to. So let's hear your story.
Well, yeah. So I do tell some of the story in the book. Two seeds that really were planted that began to grow this book in me. One of them was a fairly well-known comment that Dallas Willard once made to John Ortberg. John writes about it in his book, The Life You've Always Wanted. It's that sentence, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. And I remember hearing that the first time, and it just it struck me as compelling spiritual direction for me. So I began to lean into that a bit. And then the other comment actually was also by Dallas Willard. He and a friend of mine were having a conversation, and Dallas asked the question, if you had only one word to describe Jesus, what word would you choose? And after a bit of conversation and a number of candidates, you know, that kind of came up as they spoke, Dallas said, I think if I were choosing one word, I would choose the word relaxed. That threw me, to be honest, because I thought, first, I don't know if relaxed is a good word. I just sort of picture this Jesus on a lazy boy watching ESPN. I mean, I don't know. That stuck in my craw. And shortly after that, I went on a retreat. I did nothing for 3 days other than eating and sleeping and such, but read the Gospels with that idea in mind, is okay. Jesus relaxed. And a lot of the book came out of those days, at least started there.
So after reading the Gospels again, sort of through that lens of the relaxed Jesus, did you come out of that and go, yep, he was right, or some nuanced version of that? What did you think? What did you see and hear?
Right. Well, so for me, relaxed little by little became unhurried, which, of course, Dallas also spoke about a lot. And I began, a vision of Jesus as unhurried began to capture me.
So
that he had time.
Yeah.
Had time for people.
Yeah.
He had time for prayer. He had time to rest. He had time for the things that a lot of times we say, I don't have time for that. He did. And so that was one of the great takeaways that I began to work with as I wrote the book.
So I wanted to interrupt way too quickly. I'm glad you kept going with those things that you saw. My question, I guess, is, did you see those things in your own life, or were you struggling yourself to live or desiring to live a more unhurried life after really recognizing this in the life of Jesus? Where did you come down with this as it related and reflected on your own life at that time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I had already been on a bit of a journey in terms of my own vision of the Christian life as an intimate friendship with God and a collaboration with God in my life and work. And so that had a way of slowing me down a bit. I had begun to make time for things I'd run past earlier in my life and earlier in my ministry. But it was this vision of Jesus as an unhurried Savior that really began to get inside the engine of my hurry, which sometimes it was my own anxiety. Sometimes it was my deep craving for people to recognize me or affirm me. These were like the hamster wheels inside of me that were spinning and keeping me rushing. And so it was a journey I was on, but this was a new step in the journey.
So maybe I'll go back just a little bit from that. You are a trained spiritual director. When did that training take place? How long ago has that been? Or have you been a spiritual director for how long?
Sure. Well, I began my training in spiritual direction almost 20 years ago. It was at a Benedictine monastery in Pecos, New Mexico, and it was 4 weeks. They began with 4 weeks living in community with that group. And, you know, it was an opportunity. Well, in a sense, I guess in the language of unhurried, it was a chance to live at their pace for quite a while. And that was a real gift for me. And so that vision of spiritual direction, not only as a practical way of ministering, like a part of what I did, that began then, but also spiritual direction as a metaphor for how I lived my life, learning to live from a place of listening, learning to value presence. These were these were new ways of living and doing my work that emerged from that time 20 years ago.
I think it's interesting how we can ebb and flow in what we learn, how we take it forward with us for a nice period of time, but how it can kind of ebb away also, and we have to relearn. We're different people, but we're having to relearn some of the same things. And I think it's interesting how God brings these things front and center again at different points in our lives. Would you agree with that, or have you found that to be true?
Yeah, I sometimes picture, you know, the image of a helix. You know, from one direction it looks like you're going in circles, but in another direction you realize, no, you're just going a little deeper and a little deeper. And maybe I'm tempted to think this revisit is like, oh gosh, I never learned the thing at all. I'm just right back to where I started. But in fact, no, I've gone a little deeper, and now I'm revisiting these things at a deeper level.
Oh, I like that helix. I haven't thought of that. I always often use the illustration of a car that's going down the road and the tires touch the pavement, but they come back around and touch the pavement further down the road.
And sure.
You know, a similar idea, but I like the helix going deeper. That's a good one. Another question I want to ask, I don't know if I ought to, but I'm gonna, and you can decline. What's your Enneagram type, and how does that play into this as well?
So my Enneagram type is 5. I'm a 5.
Uh-huh.
I always sort of joke that I'm a 5 with 2 5 wings. It's not really true. That's not how it works. But I'm a very 5-y-5.
That's funny.
You know, with some of those movements, you know, sometimes there's an unholy unhurry of my withdrawing, my stepping back, my not engaging. So actually sometimes unhurried looks like a deliberate engagement in my life and in my work, not in a frantic, anxious way, not in a people-pleasing way, but in a loving and attentive way. That's been really important for me as a 5 to be able to move forward.
Boy, I like that. I have a 5 friend, and that she'll appreciate hearing that. I know. It's interesting that, you know, obviously every person engaging with your material has a different profile, has a different type, is a different type.
Sure.
And I think it's interesting. So I'm a 3. I'd like to believe a more healthy 3. I'm not driven in the same way I was certainly 20 years ago. Part of that age. Part of that is hopefully maturity. But there's still that productivity gene, and there can be that tendency sometimes to hurry in an unhealthy way. It's interesting. Let's begin maybe at a beginning spot for anyone, no matter what their profile is, no matter who they are on that Enneagram type wheel or Myers-Briggs or whatever personality type you bring to the table or bring to your listening of this podcast, what's maybe the most important place for us to start, or most important thing for us to look at the beginning?
Right. Well, I suppose I could answer that in a number of ways. I would start, and this is going to sound maybe like a simple sort of thing to say.
I think we kind of need that.
Yeah, I think at its very simplest, where I want people to begin is looking at Jesus and the way of Jesus, and let his way of life. I've been doing a little work lately, writing on that phrase that John uses, quoting Jesus as the way, the truth, the life. Sometimes we're very focused on truth as right answers to questions we have, or, you know, life in terms of doing all the right things, and who knows, but way, you know, this speaks to who Jesus is and how he goes about conducting himself and interacting with people. And I think, you know, there's a lot of power and insight transformative insight, I think, in reflecting on the way of Jesus. The way of Jesus, I think, speaks to any one of us in our unique wiring, whether that's temperament or Enneagram type or whatever. That's something I learned because I began to do some traveling, and I would speak in other cultural contexts. And what hurry looks like in a North American entrepreneurial, productivity-driven setting is not at all the same way that hurry looks like in India or in Russia or in an African nation, a few there, or in Latin America. There is hurry in Latin America, even with all the manana realities and maybe just sort of the relaxed culture. Hurry isn't just about being busy. It's something happening in my soul, and it comes in a lot of different varieties.
Well, I think that's a really helpful distinction, because I think we picture it as external. And I'm thinking even as you use, or often we picture it as external, or that's where our thinking process might go. I also think it's really interesting as you simply took it back to the life of Jesus. And I'm guessing that a pushback that someone might use could be, Jesus lived in another time, you know, very agrarian culture. They're walking most places. But what would that really look like today? Jesus still be this unhurried, what was the original word?
Relaxed.
Relaxed. You know, what would Jesus really look like, relaxed Jesus look like today? I think there are people probably pushing back and wanting to know that answer.
Sure. Well, what I think of, I guess by example, is I think of a few seasoned saints I've had the joy of walking alongside and learning from. And in the midst of the culture in which we find ourselves, they've managed to live full, sometimes busy, and relaxed lives. They've been able to be persons of presence, no matter how full their appointment calendar is, no matter how many demands are being pointed their way. This is where I think Dallas's distinction between busy and hurried is really important. Busy, that's your calendar, that's your to-do list, that's all of the different ways we now have to manage communications that even in my own lifetime, I didn't have to do 20 years ago. Busy, that's one thing. Hurried, that's our souls. Now, can we live lives that are free of anxiety? I think we could. I think the fact that we follow a Prince of Peace could be a place of learning for us. Now, will we have to practice in some way to learn how to live that way and push back a bit on the power of the culture and the ways in which the culture drives us? Yes, I think we will. Can we do it? Yes, I think we can. Will it be challenging? I think it will be. Will it be valuable? See, that's where I think, you know, I start thinking my busy is not getting as much done as I think it is. And to bear fruit that lasts, to use a line from Jesus in the upper room, I've just been finding slowing down inside, I'm getting better things done than I've ever gotten done before. And I really like that.
I love that line. My version of busy doesn't get as much done as I think that it does. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
We kind of fool ourselves, don't we, into living a certain way. And even the way, and I think even fool ourselves into believing that so much of this is external when really this is a significant internal piece.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about where we are sitting today. 6 months ago, let's say, for sure a year ago, but probably even 6 months ago, the average citizen, I certainly didn't picture us being in the position that we're in today with the global pandemic. And, at the time of our recording this podcast, most of us in the United States, at least, are still sheltering in place. You know, we're waiting for how things are going to be unrolled as to people being able to get back to life as it used to be, or normality, or, you know, it's even the terms being thrown around are,
I know,
we don't even know how to speak. So talk to, because I think there's a whole lot of anxiety that is happening. So even as you were talking about, can we live without anxiety? I appreciated hearing that. I think that there are many people who are struggling with that.
Yeah.
Struggling to focus. I don't struggle probably every day, but some days a little bit more than others with that focus piece. And then, but we have some time and space to maybe work on internal things that, that unhurried business that relates to our soul. But that there are other things in front of us that we're choosing to go to maybe, and not, instead of choosing to go to that space. So I'm just going to open it wide up and let you say whatever you want about any of those, any of those things, Alan.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure you've been thinking about this.
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, I have been thinking that this season in which we find ourselves, there's any number of ways of understanding it and perceiving it. But I think one of the things it is it is a global opportunity for unhurry that we didn't ask for. And we're not even sure we want. We're pretty sure we don't want it. I was talking to a leader just the other day, and he was talking about his life. And then he said this. He said, I realize I've been blaming my problem of hurry on everybody else. I live in a busy culture. I can't help it. I live in a busy organization. It's not my responsibility. I have a busy supervisor, hurried, you know. My family, my growing family, you know, we just, our calendar is packed. I can't help it. I'm hurried. And he said, but all that's been put on pause. And I've been left with the insight that maybe I'm the one responsible for my own hurry. Maybe it really is something that's inside of me. So I think the opportunity, though it's an uncomfortable one for a lot of us, is to just acknowledge in the presence of mercy and in the presence of grace that I may be, this hurry may be something I'm responsible for. That's not bad news. Actually, if I'm responsible for it, that gives me an opportunity to do something about it. I'm not a victim. I'm not trapped. I actually could learn how to cooperate with a master who's quite good. He turns out to be a prince of peace. So he could show me a way forward that would be a bit more peaceful. So I think what I'm thinking, what I'm saying is that I've noticed some people are just surviving, which what right now, at least here where I'm at in California, is our first full month of the stay-at-home orders that were given us. And a lot of people have just been surviving it. They pushed pause. Okay, had to do it. There's the whole binge Netflix thing. There's the whatever else that can fill my hours. It's almost looked in some cases like just sort of killing time. But you could, if you wanted, you could allow what's bubbling up inside of you, anxiety or drivenness, or am I important if I'm not doing the things I usually do, my identity, all these things. You could make these moments of prayerful encounter. And they could be places of learning. That's what my wife and I have been wrestling with. You know, our lives, like many, have been radically changed. My calendar just disappeared.
Right.
I won't get on a plane. I have no plane rides for the rest of my life right now.
Right.
I have no outside events. So now we are sitting here at home and deciding what will we do with ourselves. And we've been trying to listen well and pay attention to what's going on inside of us as part of how we'll use this time.
Is it just you and your wife at home? Any other family members? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, we have three adult sons, two of whom still live here in a house with us. The oldest is out in his own, not far from us. So, you know, we have conversations occasionally. One of them works for a tech company, so working remotely is quite easy.
Right.
The other is on the front lines as a grocery store worker, and so he's engaging people most every day. Mm-hmm. So that's a little scarier. You know, for him. But that's the reality of our family.
A little scarier for him. How do you and your wife handle that?
We talk a lot. Thankfully, he is our external processor.
Excellent.
And so he will come home from his shifts in the late evening, and he'll sit down on the stairs, and we'll be sitting in our comfortable chairs, and we'll just unpack and talk about what he experienced and the new rules that the grocery store has instituted and the ways in which the customers have learned to completely disregard the instructions.
Oh, right, right.
All kinds of stuff.
Or my experience the other day, I didn't know there were arrows telling me to go a certain way in the aisle. And all of a sudden there was an announcement. And in my head, I thought, oh, they must have been watching me and decided they better make the announcement. So I turned around and started going the correct way. I just had not looked down.
I know. Something new to learn every day.
Every time you go. Yeah. I'm thinking of the people. It's interesting you mentioned that that particular son is an external processor and you're talking through things. I'm thinking of the people who are either home alone or don't have maybe another good set of listening ears living with them, or if they're an external processor, or who might even be struggling in that way. I mean, I understand that it gives a new possibility of pressing in, spiritually speaking, but I think that can also be a struggle for some people, and because I think it might be a brand new experience also for some people. Will my needs truly be met if I lean into Christ? Don't you think there's that question in a lot of people's minds?
Sure. Because we're in a place where we're having to lean into him in ways we have not had to do before. And so, that's the risk of trust. That's the risk of faith. And it's the invitation to test and see if indeed the way Jesus describes himself as the one who, if you were to trust him, you might find, rivers of living water flowing from within you. You might discover a way of living. I think for me, the other thing I want to say is, where our son is the external processor, I am not.
I was guessing that.
I'm the think about it forever. It's going to stay in the oven till it's done, and I will not be opening the door even if you beg me. That's how I process. And so, I realized I think it's fair to say I'm 59.
Okay.
I don't know if I've ever felt my need for people as strongly as I do right now.
So let me say something. So I'm 59, and I'm an introvert, and I've been writing a haiku a day.
Really?
During shelter in place. And maybe you'll appreciate this one. For an introvert, shelter in place is a treat until it isn't. And that's where I find myself.
That's right. For me, all the sort of natural places where I cross paths with people, where I don't have to make any effort, I'll just be at church and there's some folks I can visit as I go. All of those are gone for me. And I didn't realize how much I needed those interactions. And so maybe one of the invitations of being unhurried for me is to take the initiative to reach out. So one of the things I've been doing, is very out of character for me, is every day, or most every day, I'm texting 10 people. I just pick up my phone and I started at the A's in my address book, started praying for people, and then I just would write a little note. And I do that to 10 people, and half of them, maybe a little more, right back. They say something back and I get a little bit of a connection. Now, that's not processing my stuff, but it is a kind of social connection that me as an introvert, I've never been a person who just texts all the time. It's functional if I'm going to text. But now I've had conversations for the last week or two that have really been kind of life-giving for me.
Okay, I love that. Number one, I've been writing actual letters and mailing them, cards, short form.
Sure.
It's also in support of the U.S. Postal Service. But anyway, that aside. But yes, the texts, but I've contacted a couple of different people to do a one-on-one Zoom call. I'm part of a facilitating discussion in a few classes where I'm on Zoom and find I really don't like that, the large group on Zoom. I do not enjoy at all, and I find it like draining. Smaller groups, not so much, but one person, yes. And so I've been contacting a couple of people where I'm able to do like a one-on-one conversation with them and kind of get that fix. So my question to you, hearing that, I love hearing that, and I love that even people who know themselves fairly well, which I would think you would be in that category, you would probably say, but we're always learning. The potential is there to always learn more and learn something new about who we are, how we're wired, et cetera, depending on the scenario we're put in. What do you think is hypothetical, because you don't know, but what do you take from this moving forward when we come out of this time? Is it just, oh, this met a need right now and that's the end of it? Or has it opened up your eyes to a need you didn't even realize you had?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. So it makes me think, for example, that one, I think this event that we're in the midst of, this is going to be the event that 40 years from now, someone who was 19, 20, 25 is still going to be talking about as one of the markers in their lives, one of the formational markers, the way the great generation talked about World War II. I just think that's true. And so I think, you know, in our time, you know, there was 9/11 and there was the crisis of it and there was the coming together of it. But then it was done.
Yeah.
It was still overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It still had a deep impact. This is not a moment. This is going to be a season of life. You know, World War II lasted years. I don't think this is going to fully last in its intensity for years, but it's going to be months. And when we get back to normal, it'll be a new normal, right, somehow or another. So I think the opportunity of these days, if we'll receive them as such, could be something might be formed in us that would continue when some form of normalcy returns. And so to use, you know, my language here, there could be ways we might learn to unhurry that we could carry back with us into our jobs and into our social lives and into our vocational, you know, realities and into our personal experiences. We could carry some of this back in, and we might find it's really good for us.
You know, you can't make someone become introspective or, you know, but the hope is, and actually I think the reality will be that we will be different people on the other side of this, maybe some to a larger extent than others, you know. You know, looking back at your book, you know, we've been centering around this conversation about an unhurried life, which is the name of the book. One of the things you talk about, you devote a whole chapter to unhurried enough to pray, and also rest the rhythm of creation. So I want to take a look at those two chapters specifically, because one of the things that I've found, I have found myself unhurried enough to pray in a way, in ways that I had not been doing that, or in ways that felt, I started to say, felt more effective. Certainly, internally, there's much more stirring and so more effective in my own life, which is a lot about of what prayer is about. But talk about that. What do you talk about in unhurried enough to pray, and relate it even to where we are today?
Right. So a lot of my work is with leaders, busy leaders who have a lot of things on their calendar and on their plate and on their to-do list. And so when I wrote that chapter, Unhurried Enough to Pray, the case I was really trying to make was Jesus, perhaps the leader par excellence, had time for his Father. The line that I quote and unpack at least some is the line from Luke 5, where It says, Luke says, Jesus often withdrew to lonely places to pray. And I joke that I'm pretty sure that verse wasn't in my Bible for the first 10 or 15 years of my experience of faith. I don't remember anyone talking about it,
yes,
teaching about it. I don't remember reading it. I know I did because I was in a tradition where we read the Bible a lot.
Right.
Jesus often, I mean, just those two words say, we're about to hear something that was a pattern, a rhythm in his life. And what did he often do? He often withdrew. I often say that for busy people, the great challenge in spiritual disciplines are the withdrawal disciplines. We're very good at the engagement disciplines.
Right.
We know how to do things, but to have time when we don't do things, or we don't do the things that are obviously productive. And sometimes prayer doesn't feel obviously productive, especially to a busy leader. My argument is, if the Christian life, for example, is a relationship of intimacy with God through Christ by the Spirit, you know, and that's, again, the tradition that I came up in, that was very much focused on being invited into a relationship with God. I was drawn to that. I thought that was quite compelling. And then I got busy for God and didn't have time for relationship anymore.
Got busy for God, didn't have time for him, you know,
yeah.
In essence, yeah.
Pursued the work of God to, and sometimes just to escape the face of God. And so unhurried enough to pray just says, like a lot of other things, we have an intuitive sense that being in communion with God would be a really good thing that we deeply want. It's probably something we want more than anything else when we stop and reflect on our lives. And then we say we're too busy to cultivate that friendship. Well, it's okay to notice that. And then to say to ourselves, well, at least right now we're in this season where I'm not nearly as busy in the ways I used to be busy. Now, I may busy myself otherwise because it's a habit for me. But what I might want to do with some of these moments that are not nearly as structured or filled as they used to be, I might want to turn toward God and see what a conversational relationship could become like. I might want to find a way to pour out what's in my heart in the presence of God, who is an incredible listener and who is very present to us in the things that worry us or terrify us or just bother us, whatever. So unhurried enough to pray was a way of looking at Jesus and who as a leader got more done in 3 years than I've gotten done in 30 as an adult, and yet was often withdrawing to lonely places to pray. It's not a math equation. Getting things done is not 1 + 1. It's multiplicative. It's exponential.
Yeah.
As is the kingdom.
Yeah. That's so good to remember. Would you, before I move to rest, I mean, would you say during this time, if things have really slowed down or stopped for some people, that it would indeed be a great time to read the Gospels?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. I think here would be a question I would ask. Now, obviously, there are going to be some limitations on this because of the realities of stay at home and all that. But it might be a really interesting exercise to sit down with the question, what have I continued to say to myself I don't have time for?
Yes.
What have I been saying? I just don't have time for this or that or the other.
Yeah. I almost asked earlier, what are our continual excuses about busyness? What is it that we're busy with?
Right.
You know, we say the word, but we never outline really what it is that fills in that blank of busy. Yeah.
Right. So one of the things I might find I have time for, if I can settle into it, would be to take time to read the Gospels, as you say, and read them not so much to, you know, gain insights. That's always good. I love insights that come from reading Scripture. But I think I would say to read and just watch Jesus. Just watch what he does and how he does it, and learn from his way. Just pay attention to his way. I personally think his way would be incredibly powerful today. And that's why I think becoming unhurried people or unhurried leaders would actually maybe be one of the very best gifts we could give this world. It might be one of the ways we could receive blessing and then be a blessing to the world that so needs it. Everywhere I go, this word unhurried captures the imagination of the people I interact with. That's an experience I have everywhere I go in the world. There's something about it that's intriguing, maybe scary, but a lot of people have this kind of, I think I might want that. I'm not sure if I want to, I don't pay the price that it might cost to have whatever that is, but it seems to capture the imagination of folks.
So I wanted to turn toward rest, but actually what I want to ask is, if not that, is there a chapter you'd rather end our time talking about?
I actually think the rest one is a perfect place because it really reflects the subtitle
of the book. Yes, which is Following Jesus' Rhythms of Work and Rest. So I do think about busy leaders that you talk to, and I just think about busy people who have indeed come to a screeching halt during this time. What do you mean in the book when you talk about rest, you know, the rhythm of creation, and what could that look like now? Because I think there can be an opportunity now for some of the people that you interact with, some people, many listening that do lead lives where they struggle to catch a breath maybe, but also do not know how to rest and don't really know what rest is or what rest means. So maybe you should kind of unpack that, give us a definition too.
Sure. Well, so the rhythm of creation thing is about the fact that in the story of creation, as the biblical story begins, you know, God makes a universe and then light and dark and land and sea and then plants and then critters. And then there's this day six story where we show up and our first full day of experience is a Sabbath. It's a rest day. It's a day when God's resting and it's a day when we're resting. So one of the things that says is rest is not just an absence of work. Rest is not just I push pause on work, I'm taking a break. Is way more than that. It's not a negative. It's not an absence of something. It's actually a substantial reality. What do God and those first, you know, that first man, woman do? They enjoy relationship. That's what we were made for. And the irony is rest is the place where relationship is often deepened. And then it's expressed when we return to our work together. See, so in that chapter, one of the great insights that I'm still living with and still unpacking for myself is that culturally, work comes first and rest comes second. Biblically, rest comes first and work comes second. That's the rhythm of grace. Grace is the soil. Rest is the soil in which good work grows. I'm learning I do my best work when I rest well, rest in the sense of making time to enjoy the presence of God, making time to enjoy the important relationships God's entrusted me, making time for being creative for no other reason than to be creative, making time to enjoy the good things I have and not just keep amassing more good things. Enjoyment takes time. So all of these are various facets of what I understand rest to be. But at the center of it is our identity as a culture is usually established by working. Mm-hmm. But again, in the kingdom of God, our identity is established in resting. That's where we remember who we are. And then we express our identity in what we do. But as a culture, we get that turned backward.
What do you hope? Which, by the way, that's you said a lot in those last couple of minutes that are worth listening to again. By the way, I just want to kind of put an exclamation point on that. What do you hope people take away from an unhurried life I mean, what's your hope? I think most people write a book and there are a lot of reasons how the book comes to be and why they decide to put it in print. But in the end, there's a real hope that people will walk away with blank. fill in that blank. What do you hope?
Well, my hope has been, because I'm writing to folks who would describe themselves as followers of Christ, and many of them are very faithful and very active in the way in which they do that. And my hope has been that they would slow down to remember what that means. That they would slow down to remember that the great commandment is not get more stuff done, but it's to love God with all that we are and to love the people alongside us. That's what matters now. That's what mattered 1,000 years ago and 2,000 years ago. It's what will matter 5,000 years from now. We forget what matters. And then what we do is less rooted in what matters most. That's what I hope will happen, that in our lives, in our relationships, in our work, we'll have this vision for what matters, slowing down to be able to do that, and then taking action that reflects those deep kingdom values. That's at least so far since, now we're 7 years into the book existing.
Right.
That's been the good fruit I've seen it bear, for which I'm very grateful.
Nice. Good stuff. And I, when I saw the revised and expanded edition come out, I thought, number one, I knew I wanted to talk to you. Along comes the pandemic, and then I really knew I wanted to talk to you. And I just thought it was, it's really interesting to talk about it in light of where we are today. And I just think a helpful and fruitful conversation. Alan, thank you so much. Thanks for joining me today on Faith Conversations. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's been good to visit.
And as always, to everyone else, I say keep the conversation going.